This episode of Retronauts is brought to you by Notion and Patreon.
This week on Retronauts, Super Comic Robot, Mega Man. Hello, robots and robettes, and welcome to this week's episode of Retronauts hosted by myself, Nadia Oxford. Oh gosh golly, I guarantee this is going to be a great episode because I am talking about my favorite thing, which is Mega Man, with two of my favorite people, one of whom is my husband, David Oxford, who is back with us. He has been a guest before. Hi, David. Say hi, even though I went through a lot of trouble pulling you out of like the next room for this, so be grateful.
Mega hi.
Mega hi. As for the real Blue Man of the moment, we have, oh gosh, this is exciting, Ian Flynn, the writer behind Archie's late Mega Man comic print run, and there is something else he does, some schmuck with quills, Bionic the Sledge Dog or something. Ian, why don't you explain that to us all?
Mr. Needlemouse is such an obscure property. I think we're really here for the true star, and that is Mega Man.
I agree. You know what? This is already going in the direction I wanted to go in because we are definitely here to talk about Mega Man. I've been on a real comic book kick over at Retronauts, and there's no getting off this train now. You're all stuck with me. We've explored other game-related topics in the past, including the Valiant comics and the Nintendo Power comics. Any familiar with any of those, Ian? Like, what is your comic book / comic book video game history?
We always had comics in the house growing up, and it was a hodgepodge of various things, you know, an Archie book here, a Thundercats book there, you know, Get Along Gang. I don't know if they had that up.
I actually had a Mortimer Moose figurine.
There we go.
Distinctly remember this terrible memory because I brought it to kindergarten, like junior kindergarten, which is Ontario's kind of like preschool, but the government pays for it. And you go and you're like four. So I had this little figurine and I was very small and shy and some kids stole it from me. And the teacher got mad and I got in trouble and she took it away and I cried and my dad has to rescue me. It was a very harrowing moment for myself. And then I chewed that moose to pieces because I had a chewing problem. Sorry to interrupt. Please go on about your comic history.
Well, I mean, how does one follow up with masticated Mortimer Moose? You know, read comics all the time, was big into X-Men in the 90s, and then got into the Sonic comics because that was right when the media blitz for Sonic was happening. You know, the two Saturday morning cartoons, the Archie comic tie-in, the games were coming out. He was inescapable and, you know, fell in love with the Sonic books, stuck with that through all of high school, and then coming out of that, in university, it's like, I like to write. I like Sonic. Mm-hmm. I like the comic. Why don't I just break into the business and write for the Sonic comic? How hard can
just
it
like
be?
That. Okay. Yeah.
And after 4 years, I actually got my lucky break, and I've been writing on Sonic's coattails for almost 20 years now.
They're very pointy. You have to watch those quills.
They are. And he runs so fast.
Yeah, I can see that in the case.
But through Sonic, a lot of doors have opened up for me. As you mentioned, I worked on the 55-issue run of Mega Man under Archie Comics. Mm-hmm. I did the Sonic and Mega Man crossovers, both of them. Got to write for Sonic Boom. Got to consult on Sonic Prime. I'm working on the Sonic games now and other related media. And did some Minecraft stuff. Worked on Mario and Zelda kind of adjacently. There's a couple other projects that I don't think I can talk about yet, but it's still video game related. So basically, if you take a video game and you want me to write about it in some other format, I do that. That is what I do.
You do transformations.
It's an odd specification, but hey, it works out.
You even did a cookbook, yes?
Yes, the Sonic the Hedgehog cookbook. Which, it's more than just, you know, here is Sonic-themed food. Like
chili
another
dogs.
Lazy thing.
Chili dogs all the way down.
Each and every entry is done from a character's point of view, and it's just chock full of in-jokes and little references, and you know, it's made to be loved by Sonic fans, and you can cook with it.
You can put it on the element and turn on the element. And
oh, absolutely. Do not flip eggs with a book. Do not bake this book, please.
Hey, you and I are both humongous fans of what's it called? That's how much I love it. I remember the name. Odin Sphere. Like, I remember we've talked about it several times. Now, that needs a cookbook.
Oh, God, yes. Just the copy itself would be gorgeous to look at.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Vanillaware. I am huge about Vanillaware. You are, too, I know. David, I'm going to make you huge about Vanillaware next opportunity I get. Why don't you I didn't remember if I had you on those episodes, David, but why don't you talk a little bit about, like, your past with the Nintendo comics and whatnot, because I know you have one.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, I've always kind of been into comic books, but it was a while before I was actually really into, say, comic books, your superheroes and that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I started with, like, Transformers and Ninja Turtles. I went on to Sonic. It was, like, the late 90s before, like, I'd been watching the X-Men cartoon and Spider-Man cartoons, but I hadn't really looked at their actual comic book adventures until sometime in the late 90s, like, near 2000 even.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Nintendo comic system from Valiant, I checked that out. I was a big fan of the Mario comics and Star Fox from Nintendo Power. Yeah. Sonic the Hedgehog, I was there, issue zero, and pretty much all the way to the end. I guess to the present day would be more accurate. The end of Archie and the beginning of IDW and up to current IDW, to be very specific.
Yeah.
And of course, one of my favorites has been Mega Man in manga form and comic form and slightly lesser comic form, but we might get into that later.
Yeah. I was actually, the whole reason I made this episode, because like I said, I want to talk comics, but I want to really kind of narrow it down to Mega Man because his game career, his comic career has been fraught with troubles and some great times as well. And Ian, I was actually going to ask you if you ever got to read the 2003 comic, Mega Man comic that Dreamwave did for about 4 issues and kind of lopped off face of the earth.
I didn't read it when it originally came out. Uh-huh. I did receive a trade version.
Right. That came out as well.
As a gift, I think. Did you guys give that to me?
Did we give it? David, do you remember?
I don't think so. I only remember having the one copy, and I think we still have that.
Yeah,
maybe it was a gift from someone at a convention, because I have received some lovely things from fans at shows. But yeah, I do remember glancing through that. It's been a long time, but it was fascinating from my position to look at how somebody else, you know, picked up the franchise with, from my understanding, little to no understanding of it going in.
Right.
And doing their take on it, you know, trying to interpret it for a broader, you know, American audience. How do you take just like a cursory understanding of Mega Man and make it accessible to your regular comic market? And there were some neat ideas in there.
Yeah.
You know, stuff I could see, you know, a product of its time. And other stuff where it's like, maybe do a little bit of research.
Do a little research.
I mean, this might have been like before the days of Google and Wikipedias and stuff where you could readily learn everything. But
yeah.
Those Patrick Spaziante covers, though. I mean, come on.
Oh, I mean, that made it all worth it. You're right about, not having the research available to us, because I can't remember the name of the author right off the top of my head, but he was the kind of guy who would do the books he would find at the grocery store end caps about, like, you know, Cyclops and the X-Men rescue the kitten, or, you know, Beast gets crazy or something like that, you know, the stuff for little kids. And I always got the impression that the Mega Man comic was very inoffensive because he was just kind of writing from a template almost. Like, you know how with especially in the 80s and 90s when people kind of needed to have an episode to fill in, you know, the time. Yeah. And they didn't really have the time to really write something that was really interesting and good. So here's a lesson on racism, and you've seen the same lesson in, like, you know, 10 other cartoons before. It was kind of like that. Like, I just was not interested in the whole, you know, Sentai angle of or Mega Man's a superhero. He goes to school. He's a robot. Why is he going to school? Because it's easy to write. Everyone's been to school. They can write about the school experience. It was just a little bit lazy.
Brian Augustine was the writer's name.
That's right. Thank you. Yeah. I don't want to like talk shit about him, but a paycheck's a paycheck, but that was really a paycheck.
I think he also had a pretty good run with The Flash, but I haven't really read that, so.
So he had a very basic Sentai plot. Super Kid has to go to school because I wrote a whole bunch of question marks here on the notes. You have some airhead chick who falls for his nice, bland personality. There are bullies who don't actually act like real bullies. Lunchroom robots go crazy and sling mashed potatoes everywhere because comedy, I suppose. It was just not a very, like, how do I explain this? It was more for children than for everyone. Like, I'm not here to say Mega Man comic has to have, like, blood and guts and gore. I'd really prefer if it didn't, actually. Like, actually, Ian, your tone was perfect, pretty much. So, yeah, that was not my favorite part of Mega Man's existence, I have to admit.
I think that it kind of picked up. I mean, there were only four issues of it, and I think it really picked up in the back end once, like, you know, Dr. Light gets kidnapped and Wily is revealed. And, well, I mean, he shows up earlier, but, you know, revealed as the villain. And then you get Patrick Spaziente doing the am I pronouncing that right, Ian?
Yep.
Okay. We've got him illustrating the entire fourth issue, which was great. I've actually got one of the pages from that.
Yeah.
And it went out on a high note at the very least. And it started to feel like Mega Man by that point. Too little, too late. But they also had that X crossover at the back end that, I honestly had hoped to pick up on that. I made a pitch, but Dreamwave was circling the drain by that point. So that never really got to go anywhere.
They sure were. If I'm not mistaken, isn't that what kind of got the comic canceled in the first place? I don't know how the sales were, but I don't think Dreamwave was in a good place.
I'm not sure, like, which was the cause and which was the effect there, but neither helped the other much, that's for sure.
This episode of Retronauts is sponsored by Notion. But Notion is more than just a sponsor. It helps power the show. With so many people sharing Retronauts' lead mic these days, we need all the help we can get for organizing topics, arranging schedules, lining up art, and collaborating on show notes. With support for both private, personal notes and shared spaces like spreadsheets, task lists, and wikis, Notion offers an all-in-one system for keeping projects of all sizes on track. And with the addition of a new AI-powered tool called Q&A, Notion aims to give you a convenient resource for quickly solving the problems and answering the questions that pop up along the way. Q&A won't replace the writing and research that go into creating an episode of Retronauts, but it is a handy tool. Notion AI can now give you instant answers to your questions, using information from across your wiki, projects, docs, and meeting notes. Just hit the spacebar at the start of a line, and you'll bring up the Q&A prompt from anywhere in Notion. It can help you find exactly what you need without leaving the dock you're in, so that you can stay focused on what's important. Put AI to good use with Q&A, not as a shortcut, but as a time saver. Try Notion AI for free when you go to notion.com/retro. That's all lowercase letters. Notion.com/RETRO to try the powerful, easy-to-use Notion AI today. And when you use our link, you're supporting our show, notion.com/retro.
Okay, so we all know that Dreamwave kind of effed it up. They went down the drain. They drew Optimus Prime weird and stuff like that. So they're gone. They're in the past. We're going to talk about the more modern take on Mega Man comics, the Archie universe, the Archieverse, I guess. So God help me. So Ian, we're going to ask you a few questions. That's going to kind of spark, hopefully, conversation amongst us. And at the end, I'm going to issue a fun challenge. And it's going to be like a comic writing challenge. And I'm curious to see your answers.
Okay.
So, yeah, I know. Doesn't that sound fantastic? First question. This is a very easy yes or no question to start you off. Does Capcom own, like, the characters that you made, like Quake Woman and so on?
As far as I know, yeah.
Right.
As far as my understanding of the contracts are, everything was created for the Mega Man license. So any of the original material, Agents Rose and Krantz. No. Stern.
Right. Yeah.
God, it's been so long. The federal agents, Quake Woman, Dr. Leland, all of them, they should be firmly within Capcom's grasp to do whatever they want with.
Right. I've actually been really impressed at how like popular Quake Woman is, not just in general, but especially in like Japan and Korea, apparently.
I've seen a lot of great fan art.
Go ahead, David.
I was just going to say, I try to tag him whenever I see something and I don't notice him in the likes on Twitter. It's like, ooh, Quake Woman, I got to send this to Ian.
And I mean, most props go to Aaliyah Baker for that one, because she worked really, really hard to create a robot master that fit classic.
Right.
And there was a lot of discourse about it when she came out, but because there is such a wide range of what counts as classic characters in their designs.
Yeah.
Like you look at Mega Man 1 and 2 and you compare it to like Mega Man 8.
Right.
Like some of those guys look like friggin' Maverick bosses when you get into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to find some, and then there's some, you know, NPCs in the X era that look like they could pass for classic, and there's a lot of bleed over on what would count one way or the other. But I just think it's a solid design, and she's got a compelling angle to her character that fits within the themes of classic. So I am very glad she resonated. I'm not terribly surprised. We put a lot of work into her to make that work, but I'm glad she stuck the landing.
Did both of you write her personality and all of that? Like her, like, did you collaborate on her storyline, personality, her quirks, her everything that kind of went down in the comic?
Yeah. Lee and I went back and forth for hours.
Yeah.
On how to approach this, how to do this right, how to make it work in so many different ways. And
you made it work. Both of you made it work. It's, I think, as you were saying, that's probably the reason she's so popular. I mean, people love characters with even a smidgen of story in series that aren't really known for having stories. And Capcom is definitely, sorry, Mega Man is definitely like high up on that list. So when you have a character like Quake Woman, who has like, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like existential crises as well as PTSD. It's she's different. Like Mega Man's kind of presented as the perfect hero, but of course, in your universe, he doesn't really have any sort of perfection going on either. David, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that I was really rooting for Quake Woman to get into Mega Man X Dive, and I'm a little sad that it did not happen.
Yeah.
If anywhere, it would have been there. But, you know, there was a lot riding on Quake Woman because, you know, not only was this an original character being added to the licensed book.
Yeah.
You know, right there, we wanted her to feel like a natural addition. But she was also like the first female robot master aside from Splash Woman, which would get a lot of attention in that right. And the Archie Sonic books, which were running concurrently at the time, were kind of known for their gigantic extended cast of comic exclusive characters.
Right.
Some of which were not necessarily in theme, arguably so. And we didn't want that parallel to be drawn. You know, Archie Sonic has all these crazy different characters. Now they're going to add a whole bunch of character bloat to Mega Man. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Anything new we add, we wanted to enrich the Mega Man universe, to explore an area that the base material doesn't already do.
Right.
To add to it, not to distract from it.
That actually kind of segues into another question I had for you, which is, you did not really have a huge Mega Man background coming into the comic, right?
Right. I am kind of notoriously bad at video games, and Mega Man is unforgiving.
It can be a real bear. It really can.
I knew of the series. You know, I watched the old Ruby Spears cartoon, was very confused why he was so different in Captain N, but, you know, I didn't understand, you know, licensing and parameters at the time. So I had an understanding of Mega Man, but I was not as, you know, well-versed as a hardcore fan. So when the property came along and editor Paul Kaminsky said, you know, Capcom wants to do it, you've done so well with Sonic, do you want this? I'm like, yes, I want this.
Yeah.
I know this that this is a golden goblet that I must clutch close, but I also need to do this right.
Right.
And so, you know, deep dive into the wiki's tip of the hat to Mega Man knowledge base. Thank you very much. Did a lot of read up on Dr. Wright's lavatory?
Dr. Wright's lavatory.
The Reploid Research Lavatory.
Yeah.
There we go. Watching, you know, long plays of games, you know,
yeah,
on YouTube, you know, pull up. Oh no, this is a speed run. This is not going to tell me anything.
No,
I need to watch somebody fail as much as I would. And just, you know, trying to get into all the minutia, find all the quirky Japanese stuff. Like Guts, man, likes karaoke. You'll never find that in any of the, you know, vintage US material. So
absolutely not.
That's great though. How do we incorporate that? And just tried to become one with the Mega Man.
The Reploid Research Laboratory, actually, that was is maintained by a good friend of David and I, Servbot20, who also helped us on our Mega Man X Robot Master Field Guide and the Maverick Hunter Field Guide. So, yeah, shout outs to him. He's been at his thing for as long as I've been on the internet, pretty much, which is like looking at 95, 96. And the only reason I know the amount of Mega Man canon that I really needed to start a fanfic career and then a writing career is because people like him were bringing in like whatever they could to the West, which was not a whole lot at the time, but they worked really hard. And I find it actually interesting that your entry point, because the fact that you didn't have that Mega Man, you know, useless stored up knowledge that David and I have, that kind of clears your head. Once you have nothing, you can work with anything. And I found that kind of interesting with, say, I think your representation of Proto Man was cool. Like, what was it? He's arguably the character everyone loves most in Mega Man. What was it like kind of coming at him as a new person and like seeing, oh, okay, this character is special? Like, or did you think he was special or anything like that?
Oh, sure. I mean, Blues is the Green Ranger of Mega Man. That he is the cool older brother. He is that archetype. And he is what the games presented was already just fine tuned.
Yes.
I didn't really have to do much. I was just extrapolating on a perfect foundation. And it's all there within the construction. You know, you have Mega Man, who is good and pure and blue.
And
you understand him straight up because he just does good things. And that's fine. That's comforting. That's accessible. But then you have Blues, the spurned brother. He's red. He has a different approach to things. He has that badass whistle intro.
Yes.
He is everything nice about Mega Man, but made cool.
Yes.
And because he has that, you know, bit of friction within the happy family, you know, Dr. Light and Rock and Roll, and they're all just this big, happy little family. Nothing can go wrong here. It's a Disney movie, but oh, here's the third brother off to the side. He doesn't get along with them, but it's not because of anything really like evil or untoward. It's just the misunderstanding. So there's that bang of tragedy. It's got just enough edge to make him cooler than the base hero,
right?
Without throwing it all under the bus.
I know that I would have had a great time writing him. Just were you confused at all by like the Breakman interloper? Like, to this day, I'm not even sure what Breakman's all about.
That again was, I had the benefit of the games already have been, you know, out through, I think 10 was just coming out.
Yeah.
When the comic was going. So much had already been played and explored and dissected and theorized that, you know, I could approach it from a high level vantage point and take it all in as one. So yeah, Breakman was kind of a weird one-off. I don't know if they were thinking of anything grander when they first introduced him, but I could look at it as not just, here's the weird Breakman, here is all of Blues's arc. We know he starts here. We know he ends here. Breakman is a point in it. What is the context of that point in his story, and how do we make that work? And, you know, seeing what games we had and what we could do with it and how to flesh out those angles was just really a blessing. It was great.
It's actually funny to think one of the best places for lore dumps in the Mega Man universe are the fighting games that nobody has played. The endings are just like, oh, hey, maybe Dr. Wily's working on Zero. Woo! Hey, everyone, here's Dr. Wily working on Zero. It's really blatant. And you also get, like, I think that was like the first time I got any kind of deep dive into Proto Man's mind, because I had no idea about the nuclear core that's probably going to melt down. And that's another kind of fun layer of tragedy, because what if he melts down next to his brother and inadvertently kills him, you know? Yeah, I can picture myself having a grand old time with that.
And once you get to a certain point, then the terror sinks in, because while there isn't a solid bridge between Classic and X, we do know one leads into the other. And there is a little bit of elements from Classic that carry over into X. And the long con for all this was for us to go from Classic to X. Even if X got its own book and was running as a sister series, there was that connection. And I wanted to make sure that we could do things in Classic that reflected in X without screwing up the timeline that is established.
Tier.
Like one example, I guess, would be when you had that, I wouldn't call it a crossover, but the story's kind of overlapped with that big Wily machine, and it was discovered in X's time.
That was one of the more frustrating arcs. Because editor Paul Kaminsky, you know, Capcom gave us the green light to play with the X material, because at first it was just Classic. That's all we had access to.
Yeah.
And then they gave us X as well. And so he wanted a crossover. And I said, okay. Yes, X is great, but Paul, this is baked into the story. There is no tangible crossover between the two. X and Rock do not meet. There is a mystery 100 years between the two.
Yes.
And we're being extremely faithful to this, you know, canon, and that's being received very well. So how do we do a crossover in a couple of franchises that don't cross over? And I remember I was coordinating with Aaliyah a lot on this, and it might have been her idea to come up with the Wily Walker as a robot that is fought in Classic, is buried, and then is a menace again in X, so that we have that, you know, bridging device without actually making the two meet. And we threw that out the window when we got to Worlds Unite, because, I mean, that's just a big fun, make all the toys fight each other, but we were going to do a reality reboot at the end of that anyway, so it's like, fine, just play with it, have fun with the idea, and then we don't have to worry about the mess later, because we're just gonna hit the button.
I really did like that story arc and how it came together, though. One of my favorite parts was the image where I think it was X and Dr. Kane, and they're like kind of excavating or something, and you see like a cracked Classic Mega Man helmet down in the rubble below. And that was just like, that's the kind of thing that leaves an impression on you when you've been a fan for a long time. Especially seeing it just look so perfectly faithful, like in a kind of official capacity. That's just like, oh, wow, what happened here?
Yeah, anything to do with mixing the original series and X is, I don't know what Capcom's stance on it is these days, but it was really cool back then, I have to admit, like with Mega Man X5, to just kind of see those connections, not just between Mega Man and Dr. Wily, but between Zero and Dr. Wily. Because that's, the whole Maverick Zero thing was just like exploited and ruined and could have been done so much better. And there's a Retronauts for another day. Just me ranting about how Zero's been miswritten. But here is a question from David, actually. He says, your Sonic work and your Mega Man work feel very different, with Mega Man feeling more adherent to adapting the games. Can you describe the difference in your approaches, and if doing one influenced your work on the other, even to the current day?
They were completely different beasts. Because Sonic had a much more, I would say, focused media blitz. Like, as I mentioned earlier, you had the two cartoons, you had the comic, you had the games, and with the comic, with the Archie Sonic comic, it took cues from both cartoon series and the games and did its own thing and ran for so much longer.
Right.
Like, from the end of the Genesis era to the Dreamcast era, which was like 4 or 5 years, there was no other Sonic media really being produced in the West. And the Archie Sonic comics carried that banner and just did their own thing, for better or for worse. And it became its own little microcosm. It was its own beast. So that when I came onto it, it had already been running for what, 15 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Something crazy.
Yeah, for sure. And you also had the fanfic community, which was really, really fertile at that point as well.
So when I came onto Archie Sonic, I was coming onto a legacy book. Multiple editors, multiple writers, multiple changes in licensing direction. Because when the Archie Sonic stuff started, it was handled by Sega of America. And in that day and age, children, there wasn't an idea of a global brand. You had the brand for the Western market and the brand for the Eastern market. And ne'er the twain shall meet. But come the globalization of the brand with the Dreamcast and Sonic Adventure back in 99, everything became the Japanese style.
Right.
All the old American lore was more or less chucked, and you had to adhere to the Japanese driven narrative, which was largely inaccessible to the West up to that point. And that had already been a bit of a seismic shift in the Archie Sonic, which was still maintaining the old Western lore while incorporating the new Eastern lore and making it their own thing. So when I came on board, this melting pot was a simmering. It was all sorts of stuff. It was quite roiling. The gumbo of narrative. Yeah. Mega Man, however, never had that consistency. You'd have a cartoon here, you'd have a comic attempt there, games were sporadic, and it branched off into a million different franchise angles with X and Dash and Zero and what have you. So when I came to Mega Man the comic for Archie, Mega Man Classic was for all intents and purposes done at that point. Because again, like 9 and 10, I think were just coming out or hadn't quite come out when Archie Sonic, Archie Mega Man started.
They'd been out for a couple of years.
Had they? Okay. But it was still, they were still kind of new in their own right. It was, oh, look, classic Mega Man's back. We haven't had this in forever.
Yeah.
And even still, you had everything from Mega Man 1 up to 8 established for a long time. And the various other little spinoffs and tie-in things. So the story was written. It was established.
Right.
The fandom was familiar with it inside and out. So coming to that, I wasn't so much picking up a legacy book and continuing with my square to the crazy quilt. I was looking at what had already been established and was just doing my adaptation of what was already there. The roadmap had been laid out for me.
Right.
It was just a matter of, okay, how do we fill in the gaps between games? How do we tie things together a little more tightly? Because that's what they weren't thinking of back in the 80s.
No. They didn't know what color Mega Man was. They were like, he's kind of greenish on my broken-ass TV, so he's going to be kind of greenish in this cartoon. Why does he sound like a smoker? Everyone sounds like a smoker. It's the 80s, kid.
Mega.
And then we get stuff like Capcom was exceedingly flexible with approvals in that era. Like,
I have worked with Capcom before, and they're pretty good with approvals.
And even when they started to tighten up on things towards the end of the comic run, they are still by far the most flexible of any licensor I have ever worked with. So the level of creative freedom we had with that title was insane. Like, the fact that we were allowed to adapt Super Adventure Rockman.
Yes.
And make it a core plot beat still blows my mind.
That was great.
But again, I wouldn't have been able to do that if Mega Man were still growing and evolving and changing. Classic was done, more or less. So I was able to look at it at the macro level and parse it down and understand it that way. So, yeah, completely different approaches to completely different properties with histories and standings.
So even with the Archie reboot and the new IDW thing, the fact that Sonic is still ongoing on a regular basis, that basically lends a different perspective, I guess.
Yeah, the Archie Sonic reboot was a nasty knot to untie because yeah. we wanted the book had such a legacy and such an ardent fan base that we knew we couldn't just wholesale reboot because there'd be riots. There would be pitchforks yeah. and fire in the streets. But we were also, you know, really painted into a corner with what we could use in terms of older material. So how do you make something that is accessible to the casual Sonic game fan who will be picking up this book because they've heard it's a fresh reboot and it's a fresh start, but also make it palatable to those who are going to miss that 20 years of lore that's just been tossed out the window? It was not an easy balancing act. I think we did the best with what we had. Mm-hmm. And given the turnaround time, I'm rather proud of what the team was able to accomplish, but it was a challenge. Whereas IDW Sonic is part of the greater Sonic brand now. Like, Archie Sonic was its own thing. It yeah. was the weird redheaded stepchild. IDW Sonic is modern Sonic. It is part right. of the greater brand. It is scrutinized differently, and it has a different working relationship with Sega and the licensing. So it itself is also a very different beast.
Kind of out of the blue question for you that just formed in my mind, God help you. I know you're not very good at Mega Man games, but you still play them, of course, right? Like, I'm sure you played them lots. Do you ever, this is something I used to do a lot, do you ever kind of go through the games and kind of come up with a story as you play, like the visual storytelling in the game? Like, for example, a popular AMV has a Mega Man going through Dustman stage, and which is a robot junkyard, and having these terrible existentially regrets set to one of the best OC remixes of all time. I have to admit, I never kind of thought of Dustman that way, even though he's like my favorite robot master, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Like, do you ever do anything like that?
I have not been able to be successful enough with Mega Man to have that luxury.
Your head is just full of swears.
Yeah, like, let me put it this way. When Mega Man 11's demo came out, I couldn't beat it on easy mode. Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's how abysmally atrocious I am at Mega Man. Sitting back and watching somebody else play it competently, it's like, ah, okay. Now I can, like, with Mega Man, which one is Gemini Man?
That's three.
Three?
That's my baby.
When you get to his stage and there's all the weird, like, bubbles and, like, tadpole eggs and whatever floating around.
Damn those things.
Like, if I were playing it straight, I would be busy trying to navigate the stage and not think about it. Watching it, I'm like, what is this?
Right.
Where are we? What is the context for this stage? What is the theme? Why is Gemini Man here? How does this make any sense?
So you still use the visual storytelling of the games to kind of come up with your stories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, Mega Man is more than just blue man go shoot bad robot. It's the right. journey. It's... he's a hitman. He's going out into the world to take these other robots. And part of that is the journey, getting there.
Right.
And, doing Bowman stage means something wildly different than doing Shade Man stage.
Right. Oh, Shade Man stage is so freaking awesome. I love Shade Man. Personally, like, the reason I liked writing for young adult stuff like that is because I'll admit I kind of like to write the darker, edgier stuff, but with something like the young adult or comic genre, you have to censor yourself a bit. So you can't go absolutely crazy. Like, I kind of am so tired of like edgy Power Rangers and stuff like that. I'm struggling to get through Castlevania, to be honest with you, just because nobody stops saying the F word for 5 seconds. I know, don't get me wrong, I'm fucking filthier than a two-peckered goat, something I just picked up from Baldur's Gate 3. But you got to stop sometimes. You got to stop so that the people recover for a moment and think you're good and then come right out again. You can't just kind of barrage me over and over again. And that's my complaint. So I'm jealous you got to write for Mega Man. That's what I'm getting at here.
Well, Mega Man 2, you know, to be true to the franchise, you have to play within its rules. And Mega Man Classic is fun. It's bright. It's colorful. It's bubbly. It deals with some bigger ideas in the core game, not just where we went with the comic. But it's always cheerful and hopeful in the end.
Yeah, hopeful.
There's always a brightness in there. And I feel like some folks kind of overhype the darkness of X.
A bit.
I mean, there is some blinding neon throughout that series. It is just as candy colored, but there is that darker undercurrent. Mm-hmm. And Classic doesn't have that. So while we were approaching some of these more somber ideas throughout, there was always this kind of looming idea of this is Classic. You can't take it to the dark side because that's not what Classic is.
Mega Man can shoot out of his hand, but he can't hold a gun and shoot out of the gun.
There always has to be room to walk it back so that they can go on a picnic on a sunny day and you're not worried about them having flashbacks. That's what it is. It's hopeful. It's fun. It's accessible. And I think that's part of what makes Classic so endearing is that you can come to it at any point and feel comfortable with, you know, whatever doom is on the horizon.
For sure. Yeah. If you had the chance, would you have liked to cross over a Mega Man with any other property that's not Sonic?
Sure. I mean, that's the fun of any of these fantasy things is seeing how they fit together. You know, what are the themes that you can wind between the two? What are characters that would get to work together well or not work together
well? Yeah. I actually, since Rockman Dive kind of put the idea in my head, I would love to play a Mega Man X Monster Hunter crossover. That would just be radical. Man, it'd be so cool that I can't even find the words to express how cool that would be. But yeah, that would be my dream crossover. But I'm not really huge into crossovers. Not like the kids today who are all like universe that and verse that and Marvel, Disney, whatever. But yeah, it's I don't know. You like say Skies of Arcadia, Mega Man Skies of Arcadia. Oh, that's Mega Man Legends. Let me try something else. What about you, David?
Oh gosh, like you just pointed out, it would depend on the series. Like Skies of Arcadia with Legends, for example. As far as Classic, honestly, I think the most enticing idea would be if Mega Man was able to meet his, how do I put this, progenitor, Astro Boy.
That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
That would be a neat crossover, I think.
Isn't there a poster, official poster of them shaking hands that came out quite recently or something like that?
I think there was some sort of Capcom Tezuka art exhibit or something going on.
That's right.
I forget if that was a part of it, but if there's ever going to be an official one, that's where it would be.
Kind of a semi-related question then, Ian. What other Mega Man series would you want to do that's not X or Classic? Like, would you like to do... I don't know if you're a huge Battle Network fan, but the kids really love Battle Network.
Battle Network, what little I experienced of it was fun and engaging and certainly neat.
Yeah.
But because it wasn't part of the core timeline, I never did as much of a deep dive on it as the others. Mm-hmm. Like when I was working on the comic, it was like, okay, here's Classic, and we know that goes into X, and we know that goes into Zero, and that goes into ZX, and that will eventually lead to Dash. And there's that through line. I need to understand all of Mega Man to make this work in the long con, because totally, I'm going to have this for 30 years. There's going to be no bumps in the road. And then it's like, okay, here's the Battle Network. It's its own thing. That's fantastic. I cannot keep up with all that lore. No. So going back to it fresh, sure, that would be neat.
I wrote a quick timeline guide on US Gamer RIP back in the day about how one of the characters, Andrew, if you follow his story, which he tells you in Mega Man Zero, you can kind of put together what happened in the timeline of Mega Man. And it's, I mean, not everything, of course, but kind of get a general idea of what went on, because he fell in love with a human and was a teacher and this and that. And he just has a really interesting perspective that is the only hint of any sort of longevity between any sort of connection between the series that you're going to get. Very strange, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's any chance at all that IDW will revive the comic? I mean, please.
I can't say it's impossible, but I don't know.
Right.
On the one hand, from my understanding, IDW and Archie have a good working relationship as companies.
Mm-hmm.
And were IDW to pick up the license, you would have a large library of material that you could put straight to trade real fast.
Yeah.
And I have a good working relationship with IDW. I work well with their team. I would just love to hit the ground running and pick up where we left off and finally get to Mega Man 4. That's what I was building towards. That was the mountain peak.
That pissed me off. What a place to end. Oh, man.
But at the same time, it's been how many years since Mega Man 55?
2015 is when, the December. So it's been 8 years, I believe.
So I would understand why IDW and Capcom wouldn't want to revive a old dead book.
Right. It'd be a reset, probably.
To pick up in the middle of a major storyline to go forward. They would probably want to start something fresh somewhere. So, which I understand, truly.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It hurts to say it out loud, but I get it.
Whatever it would take to save it. The idea, I suppose.
Like, the nightmare scenario is that IDW gets it and it's classic, but it's a fresh start.
Yeah.
And it's like, here, Ian, tell it again. It's like, but we did it right the first time.
Yeah.
We did it. We shot it 8 times and we did it. It's done.
Now, if we were in that scenario, you know, the monkey's paw curls and here's classic again, but start from scratch, I definitely would not take the, decompressed approach that we did with Archie Sonic. That was built very much for the 4-issue trades at the time.
Writing for the trades.
And it was built with the assumption that it would have the same kind of staying power as Sonic, which by all rights, it largely did. Without getting into too much behind the curtain talk, we thought we had time to, you know, really tease things out and take our time.
I had to idea with a Twilight Zone guy. It's not fair. I've had time.
If we were to do it again, I would take a more aggressive approach to explore things a little faster, or maybe take the Auriga approach and say, okay, classic happened. Now we're just going to play with all the toys post 11.
That would be awesome.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's the kind of approach I would like to see, or I would have loved to see what you're going to do with 4. So if you could, like, you know, just summarize, okay, 1, 2, 3, and this is 4. This is where the story gets interesting, arguably. I don't know. Working with that might be cool, but I know no one here is a wizard. Just comic wishes. Comic wishes.
I was going to ask if you think it would be viable. Like, okay, if you're starting again from square one, but you're following the same template and trying to get back to that same point, do you think that maybe like kind of telling an abridged version of the stuff that's gone on in the Archie comic? Like, because you said it would be like, wouldn't be as decompressed. Do you think something like that would be viable and then the two would just kind of converge at Mega Man 4?
Maybe.
So either way, you could pick it up?
Maybe. The thing is, like, when we started off IDW Sonic, we had a issue a week, four-issue blitz that was specifically designed to bring readers up to speed on what Sonic was. Here's the principal cast. Mm-hmm. Here's the tone of the world. Here are the stakes. They're each individual stories, so you can pick them up separately, but they're all building towards a final goal. It was kind of a crazy construction, but that's kind of the spirit of what you're asking for Mega Man. With Mega Man, however, I feel like to cover all those points, it would be more like a clip show.
Right.
And that's not good comic reading. That's like your free comic book day. Here's what you missed. Come back next month and pick up the real book. And we already did like two clip show time travel stories.
Yeah.
Doing a third kind of feels like you're really pushing that envelope.
Is there a story that you really wanted to tell? Like in, you were, other than the Mega Man 4 story, of course, like say around the X series, like that you're really kind of saving up for.
Oh, X in and of itself. Right. I wanted all that. Give me all the chocolate cake. But out of everything in X, I think what I wanted the most was X4.
Ah. Oh, that would have been so good.
Like the build up to it, to establish Repliforce, to establish the two competing attempts to regulate Reploid society, and then to look into the tragedy of it, which is ultimately a battle of ego.
Yes.
It's very two organizations. Yeah. Both two groups, both alike in dignity here.
Fatal loins indeed.
If either side could just swallow their pride and talk to the other, Sigma's plan would have fallen apart, but both organizations were built on these lofty ideals that were in direct opposition to each other. So there was no room to back down.
Right.
And that's the tragedy of it, is they're both trying to do what's right, but are going about it the wrong way. Mm. And that plays directly into Sigma's hands. And that I feel like is the most interesting use of his corruptive power.
Right.
Turning everyone into mavericks, making them violent or bending them to his will, that's fine in like your evil wizard zombie type of thing. But to do it on a philosophical level where there is no magic evil code that just rewrites you to do bad, that it's the heroes making the mistake, but you understand why. That I feel is just so compelling.
I have to admit, I'm going to reveal how utterly snobbish I am right now by saying when I wrote fan fictions way back in the day and I wrote Sigma, I based him on Iago from Othello. Just the kind of like the back talker, the backstabber, the kind of person who can put terrible images in your head and make you believe the worst of another person. Yeah. I liked writing him as a more like kind of psychological attacker versus a physical attacker.
And Sigma in particular, I wish we could have really gotten into...
I loved your start. It's just a goddamn why.
Like, just because he was built to be the hero.
Yes.
Of all Reploid kind. He was supposed to be the pinnacle. And I really wanted to get into his head and show how this idea of I am the best of my kind meant to protect everyone, and how that twisted to I am the best of my kind and we are being held back by these lesser beings.
By these humans.
And while I wasn't super wild about some of the revisions in the Maverick Hunter X remake.
Yeah.
I did like the shift so that Sigma's fixation was on X more than Zero. It made X feel like the protagonist again.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And his fixation on X being the true pinnacle of what the Reploids want to be, because the Reploids are all Kirkland brand X when you get down.
They are.
Dr. Kane's like, I can almost get this right, but good enough. Ship it. And Sigma is the pinnacle of the bootlegs when you get down to it.
Yeah.
And he recognizes X as that true potential. He is alive. He is that one step beyond. And he desperately wants that for himself. And at the same time, he wants X to take the next step as well, because you can be so much more than these fleshy little meat bags. Why do you protect them? Let's work together to make our kind better. Also, I'm a ghost now.
And I'm going to mostly be a ghost for the duration of this series. Did you read or look at Iwamoto's Rockman X mangas at all?
I have not, no.
Now, that's very interesting because, again, going back to my horrid fanfic background, I was hugely inspired by Iwamoto's stuff. I couldn't read most of it. I did get a couple of translations. The early 2000s, man. But just looking at the way he draws Mega Man X and Zero and how much emotion he puts into it is just like, it's not just one of the best pieces of Mega Man media, but also just some of the best like adaptation media I've ever read, because he just really puts his everything into it. And he still does. Like, he still writes all the time about Mega Man on his Twitter account. Now, the reason I ask you this is because it ties into our cool challenge that we're going to kind of issue here. So Iwamoto also wrote a Mega Man novel. He summarized Rockman X through a novel form. That's really – I really do recommend you read that, because you'll absolutely love it. It has been translated. Half the translation is pretty good. The other half's very rough. I don't know if anyone's going to go back and fix that. But it's not so bad that you can't tell what's going on. And the reason I bring this up is because when Rockman X goes up against the Mavericks – there's like always some quirk to them, always some background story, something that always makes them like, you know, really unique and interesting. And for Launch Octopus / Octopold, his whole thing is he's an artist. And if you played Mega Man Maverick Hunter X, you probably know that, right? You remember that Launch Octopus was all like, oh my God, look at my cool works, right?
Oh God, it's been so long. But yeah,
well, it's not that important. Basically, he's an artist. And in the novel, this is so stupid. He makes Mega Man X walk through a display based on, here it comes, the seven deadly sins. Now, I heard you grunt, your grunt of I want to get my hands on this thing and destroy it. I feel that energy, Ian. I understand this in my heart, because I felt the exact same way. Now, in the novel, it's all kind of very basic. I have to admit, I don't know if it's translation, I don't know if it's the source material, but it's all like, oh, he goes to the Wrath Room and there's Reploids fighting each other. It's not really, it doesn't make you think. And I love Iwamoto. I respect him. But it's like, oh, he goes into the Lust Room and there's like a Reploid with a nice body. And they're like, what is that? That doesn't mean anything. Now, Ian, let's say that you have like, okay, all the room that you want. You can do this as a comic or a story, but let's say you do it as a comic. Like, what would you do? Like, how would you represent those sins? That's what I want to know, especially lust. Don't check it out on lust. Don't forget, it has to be like PG. That's where the challenge comes in.
All right. So
you have to do all the sins, just anything off the top of your head. Like, you know, just go for it.
Well, forget Launch Octopus. This is now going to be presided over by a new Maverick leader, Infernal Dante.
There we go. Now we're talking. With gas, so to speak.
Oh, what are the classic seven days? So gluttony.
Gluttony's
gluttony
big
means
one.
Nothing to Reploids, because they don't necessarily have to eat.
It was addressed in the story, though. I will tell you that much was probably interesting because energon crystals,
yeah,
which are kind of, to me, I also thought they were a new thing. Like, they're needed to power Reploids, but that's always been the case, apparently. Like, it was just in Japan. Like, it was known, and here it wasn't known. So there is an instance where X goes into a room and is full of energon crystals. It doesn't mean anything, but your version is probably better, whatever you're going to come up with.
Well, this does not say if they don't have to eat. Nobody told Double, but...
I mean, I interpret it as they can eat because they are made to be simulacrums of humans.
Yeah.
That anything they ingest can contribute to their energy processing systems, but the energon is what gets them moving.
Right.
But the whole thing of gluttony isn't needing to eat. It is the indulgence of eating, to take in for just the sake of consumption.
Yes.
So... it wouldn't necessarily be food or energy, but power. You know, X needs the arsenal. He needs the tools to fight his one man war against the Maverick Hunters that have been turned against him.
Ah, hell yeah.
This is civil war. His world is imploding. He would need everything he can get to protect people. So instead of a room full of energy crystals, I'm imagining just like this complete arsenal. He could modify himself forever.
Damn.
And walk out as, you know, God only knows, some kind of abomination. That sure, he could nuke Sigma, but there's always that one more tweak, that one more optimization, that one more bit of software. He could continue to improve himself and just take in more and more and stop being X.
Yeah.
That would be the threat of gluttony.
That's awesome.
The part of the thing is, like, X is supposed to represent limitless potential, so... I suppose you combine that aspect with the gluttony. It's like, would there ever be an end?
Exactly. And that's why it's a trap room. It's,
uh-huh.
You know, the man in black has left this for you, gunslinger.
I get that reference.
Let's see. Pride.
Pride's an easy one. You were just mentioning Reploid, Reploid Force and Hunters just like not talking to each other. I think if Reploids are guilty of any sin, pride, and is represented by Zero.
We're working in this context of it's kind of a trap room in early in Sigma's rebellion.
Good point. Yeah, yeah.
So we're pre-Repliforce. Sigma, in a way, is pride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pride in himself, pride in his construction, pride in his people. But I feel like that's a big thing to drop into the pride room.
Hi, I'm Pride. How you doing? Today I'm not Sigma, I'm Pride.
And I guess it's too early to call out like Ix or what was the other X knockoff?
X-Kai.
There we go.
From an alternate X2.
Those are all too early, but something along the lines of another version of X, because there is that pride to be had there. He is the template for all Reploid kind.
Right.
There is great pride to be had there. He could be leader. Why is he not leading the rebellion? Why is it Sigma when he is the superior construction?
Mm-hmm.
He could take control of all of this. He could lead the Reploid revolution because it would be his. It should be his. Why has he not claimed his destiny? And he's like, no, I like people. And he walks out the room.
Yeah. I like people. Bye.
He walks through the door and then there's just a pit there.
Why is there a Kid Icarus reference in here?
It's what comes after Pride.
Oh, the fall. Aha. I see what you're doing there. Wrath would be, I guess, a unwinnable hostage situation. Or shoot, even some kind of Sigma doppelganger, because there's a lot to be angry about.
Yeah.
The whole point was to build a better society, and now it's being torn apart. And he doesn't want to fight anyone. He doesn't want to hurt anyone. And you're forcing his hand. The whole reason he put the buster on was to protect others. You are making him go against everything he stands for. So if you want him to be violent, fine. He'll be violent. He'll put it into it. He'll shoot every one of you. No, he's not. No, he's not. This is just a trap room. There are not innocents involved. These are not fully functioning Reploids. These are just like mechanoloids. He can get through this. He doesn't have to fire a single shot. He will get through this on his own terms, peacefully. He will circumvent Wrath.
Nice.
That's kind of different from what I was thinking for it. which would basically be the climax of Day of Sigma, just playing in front of him on a loop.
Mm.
I can never remember the 7% sadly. I always say anger.
Pride,
twice.
Greed, wrath, envy, greed, lust, greed, gluttony, greed. And sloth.
Now, greed is kind of an extension of gluttony, but it's more monetary. It's material goods.
Right.
And you could also argue that that room full of endless arsenal kind of falls under that, but it's not really the same, I guess, because it's not for his personal gain. It's for consumption in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he could be tempted by anything remotely greed. Like, here's all the Zenny in the world.
Maybe he
build your own moon colony. You know, we'll buy you Australia. You can live with the humans there.
What's this, mate? Who dropped this here? I would think that maybe there's a chance he could pick up a bad habit from humans about hoarding things that make him feel good.
Mm, there you go. Here's all this memorabilia from the classic era, you know,
yeah,
a time where you came from, but you don't have. We'll give you all these antiques.
Yeah.
You can curate it.
My idea on that one, it's definitely a far forward kind of, I guess, foreshadowing, you could say. Maybe not do it exactly, but I think probably the best representation of greed, like, you know, for X would be Neo Arcadia.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It would have to be done as like kind of a vision of the future or something. Like, what's this fuzzy image? What am I looking at?
They've done it before.
You could have it all. You could have control over what everyone thinks. You could have peace because everything belongs to you. You could be the savior of all mankind. X is like, yep. I'll never fall for that. Somewhere in the far future, Zero goes, hit you.
Of all the ridiculous ideas before me today, this is just the stupidest.
Sloth is a replication, is a replica of his original capsule.
Hmm.
And the option to just go to sleep. You cannot fix this crisis. It's too big for you. You don't even want to fight anyway. This is not only a danger to your body, it is destroying your poor little digital soul. Just go to sleep, and when you wake up, it'll all be over. You don't have to lift a finger. Let the problem solve itself.
Right.
If humanity can overcome this, they'll wake you up. If the Mavericks take over, they'll wake you up. You'll be fine. You don't have to do anything. You're so tired of this fight already. Just lay back and take a nap for the next 1,000 years.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a little more interesting version of like what I had in mind, which was basically just playing into his, like, you know, reluctance to fight.
I was going to play into him just like sitting on the couch and eating corn chips. Because everyone does it. Human or reploid.
What are the two we missing? Lust and?
Envy.
Envy. Envy is zero.
Ooh.
Right, sure. Like the whole start of X is... Yeah. You know, the fact that he can't beat Vile, and Zero comes in and one-shots everything. Zero is the cool one. He's got the saber. He's got the cooler color scheme. He's got the hair. He's
the Green Ranger, the other Green Ranger.
Exactly. And it's, you know, the bar that he wants to reach. So I guess within the room of Envy, it would be some replica of Zero, because goodness knows we never will see that ever again.
Never.
Telling X that either A, he can't reach that point, so he might as well give up. You know, I know this is what you want, but look at you, little baby boy. No.
My baby boy.
Or, baby. You know, I can fast track you to this. We can be equals if we serve Sigma. You know, you can be the cool one. I'll even paint you red if you want. You can be Corvette X.
I'm just picturing X out there with like a real sloppy paint job. It's like, why don't you at least tape my face before you? Sorry.
I'm just imagining X waving away the paint and he's like, nope, I got this. And then he just changes colors.
I got your color. Power. Color power.
And Zero's like, wait, what did you have that would let you turn into that particular color scheme? And X is like, nothing.
Lust is a... All right, this one we need to kind of dissect, because we know that there is emotional desire within the Reploids. We see that between Iris and Zero.
Yes.
They can have emotional ties between their own kind. And you've got characters like Ferrum, which are definitely designed with something in mind.
They're designed for a purpose.
Yeah. But there is the question of, do Reploids feel lust? Is there a sexual attraction? Because they don't reproduce sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Part of sexual attraction is that base desire to reproduce, to get all the interlocking gears interlocking and exchange the genetic information.
Interlocking.
And with Reploids, you have the digital DNA, but you basically upload that into a shell for the next of kin. You literally build your next kid. And I don't see that primal drive being there.
It's no one sat down and explained it, except maybe the biggest hint we have is, again, Mega Man Zero, where you have Reploids falling in love with humans and vice versa, and they live together. So there's got to be something going on.
But that's the emotional side again. And lust is not necessarily emotional. All the seven deadly sins are a degree of unrestrained consumption,
mm-hmm.
self-destructive intake, where moderation is normally the key.
Mm-hmm.
And lust just doesn't exist because there isn't that carnal desire within the Reploids. So what is an equivalent to what Reploids want? And I guess that becomes an even bigger question of, what is it that Reploids want?
Yeah, this is definitely the hardest one to get around. And thus here's what I would do. This is more about not just the evils of lust, but also to destroy X's total faith in mankind. He would go into a room and there would be, just a handful of Reploids hanging out there, a female Reploid, a male Reploid, a non-conforming Reploid, just different genders represented. And they're all clearly abused in some way, used, beat up. And one of the Reploids, a female most likely, says, "Oh, Mega Man X, we have such stories to tell you." And that would be it.
Hmm.
If it helps at all, Wikipedia says that lust is a psychological force producing intense desire for something or circumstance while already having a significant amount of the desired object. And it can be lust for sexuality, money, or power. So I don't know if that helps.
I mean, then we're getting into, it's gluttony and it's greed again. It's
the base
desire for having more than what you already have.
Whatever we can come up with would be a lot better than a pretty lady. Hey, I'm a pretty sexy lady.
Yeah, just saying, X is tempted by robo titties. That's the easy way out.
Hard really mode.
Is. Exactly.
Hard mode. You can't use Zero.
I was going to say, it's pretty clear he already wants Zero's robo titties. So, I mean,
don't we all?
Ladybot doesn't mean anything.
So that's one. I guess that's one for you to think on.
I cannot deconstruct that one on the fly, I'm afraid. You have trumped me. 6 out of 7 ain't bad, though.
No, you did really well. You had some great ideas there. I love sloth. Dear God, do I feel sloth? except I won't wake up in 1,000 years. I'll wake up in 8 hours and be like, oh, all my problems are still here. Shit.
You'll wake up and you'll be like, okay, why is everything underwater? What's digging?
I also like the... I also like the gluttony one. That's a really good idea. Not just gluttony for food. Obviously, they can't work, but gluttony for that power kind of ties into envy as well. So good job. Hey, Capcom, look, Ian wrote a fantastic story and we helped. So why don't you maybe hire him to make that comic? Somebody, please. I want Mega Man X to exist as a comic again.
I think enough time has passed. And it's so inconsequential, I can say it, but I was actually on board to do the next classic game. years before 11 was even known about.
Wow.
Wow.
And I got as far as one conference call to talk about, you know, the scope of the project, the expectations, what would contracts look like. And then I think a month later, there was a major internal shuffle with Capcom, and it completely dissolved. And that's the last I heard from him.
Damn. I'm sorry.
The basic core idea of it would have been the end of the classic era.
Oh,
like not necessarily the cataclysm.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of the cataclysm.
No, I don't really follow the cataclysm. It's a tone of the
classic, but the end of rock and roll's journey, the end of blues's journey, the end of bass's journey, and, you know, setting up, okay, this is where classic wraps, X is from pretty much this point on.
Yeah.
And, yeah, didn't happen.
Shit. I don't know. I'm always at odds with the idea of classic actually ending because it's, you know, it's basically like effectively they're Mario, they're Sonic, and it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, we kind of know what happens later, but, you know, I see it as more like, you know, okay, maybe you could do something like Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, where you're kind of like, you know, looking forward at it, but then like the stories still go on as they want. With,
sure.
you know, kart racing and soccer games and whatever else they want to do on the on the side. Games. But incidentally, I was just thinking, speaking of X, as we've been doing a lot, what do you think if, like, IDW did a X book and then came back and picked up the Archie Mega Man comic, like, you know, later, like, after that was established? Do you think that would be a more viable proposition?
I think so, yeah, because, you know, what we did with X in the Archie verse was so light that we could retread that ground again without it feeling like we're spinning our wheels.
Yeah.
And then launch into X proper. Like what we had in Archie X, that's such a weird thing to say out loud. it wouldn't
picturing
be.
I'm picturing Archie in Mega Man X armor. Gee, Reggie, why are you defecting to Sigma? Shut up, Carrot Top.
Would Reggie be vile?
God, I mean, he already is. There wouldn't be any like essential reading from that era. We right. could start into X at the beginning or even before the rebellion, you know, just to set the stage a bit and then go from there and then tie it back without too much muss or fuss, I think.
Yeah, it can be done. I want to see it done.
And then maybe reintroduce classic after some trades have been printed or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
pick up, yeah.
Hit the ground running with X because it can stand alone.
Yes. Yeah.
Seed the trades with classic, and then oh hey, now the classic's all back out there. Here's Mega Man 4. Here's Cossack story. I've been building towards
read it finally. Thank you.
Yeah. So hey, I guess maybe we have a plan if anybody's listening to it.
And. Yeah, we actually do have a lot of people listening. People like the show. People like Retronauts. And this has been a really, really great episode, but I'm afraid we have to wrap it up. So thank you so, so much, Ian, for joining us on this Paper Mega Man episode. Did you have fun?
Oh, absolutely. You guys are lovely to chat with, and so is, and Mega Man's a great topic. So easy peasy.
Oh, we had a great time. I am your host, Nadia Oxford. Please support Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts. Support us at the $3 level to get episodes a week early and ad-free. Support us at the $5 level for 2 exclusive podcasts a month. Subscribe at the magical Nintendo 64 dollar level for a chance to set the topic of a Retronauts episode of your own once every 6 months. Now, Ian, where can we find you these days?
You can find my website, bumbleking.com. That's Bumble like the bee, King like the reigning monarch. That has my full portfolio, a number of online shop options, including signed comics, and links to the Bumblecast, which is my own podcast where we do Q&A sessions every episode. You can ask me anything that you want. We have prioritized queues so that you can pay to get to the head of the line as best you can. Or whole episodes dedicated to your questions, just you, or shoot, even guest spots, kind of like what I'm doing here.
There
so
you
head over to bumblecast.com, that's Bumblecast with a K, or bumbleking.com, and you'll find other links to my personal Patreon, where I have the odd bit of personal writing when I actually have time to do that. Mm-hmm. My two original comics, Drogoon and The Nine Lives of Claus McGee, and all the other things that I can't think of right now.
Because I put you on the spot, but that's okay. We know where to find you. We know where to go if we, sorry, when we have Ian write the next Mega Man comic. So there you go. There's where he is. And what about you, David? Where can we find you? I know, but these people don't.
Well, let's see. I'm on Twitter at LBD_Nightrain, NYTETRAYN. And also at the MM Network. That's the Mega Man Network's Twitter. And you can find me on other social media, although I'm not doing much with them yet, but same names minus the underscore on Blue Sky. And I'm also updating the mmnetwork.com pretty frequently, including some Mega Man world fiction of my own, which I've got a big thing poised to drop on December 17th, the 30th anniversary of Mega Man X. So I hope people will be checking that out.
And you should check it out. As for me, you can find me at the Acts of the Blood God podcast. We cover RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. Please support us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. That is also where I host Charlene Dropouts with Victor Hunter and sometimes Eric Van Allen and Mike Williams. We talk all about Final Fantasy XIV. And yeah, until next time. Now you know what happens when Mega Man gets equipped with a redheaded teenager that owns a shitty jalopy.